This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. When ADD became a household acronym over a decade ago, it put a name to the disruptive behavior of millions of children with unmanageable and impulsive conduct. It's now called ADHD, Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. Until recently, however, little information was available about adults who grew up with the disorder and continue to live with it. Being easily distracted, overly excitable, and having a tendency to repeat the same mistake, those are just some of the behaviors that can follow a person with ADHD through a lifetime. Today, we'll talk with experts about managing ADHD in adulthood. Later in the program, we'll follow two cyclists up the French Alps, the powerful six-time champion Lance Armstrong and the more elderly and portly reporter Peter Ford. But first, adults with ADHD. If you have questions about the condition, give us a call. If you suffer from the condition, we also want to hear from you. How are you managing? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. To understand what it's like to be an adult with ADHD, it's helpful to understand what it was like to have it as a child. Robert Juergens struggled for years until he was diagnosed, to his great relief, in his early 20s. He wrote a book called The Little Monster, and he joins us now from the studios of Wisconsin Public Radio in Green Bay. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So what were you like as a kid?
Well, like the book says, I was a little monster. I didn't mean to be, and I think that's one thing I want people to understand. I actually tried to be a good kid. I tried to do things for my parents, and I tried to be helpful, but it just never turned out the way that I wanted to. I would go volunteer to mow the grass, and then I'd get distracted and leave the lawnmower running for 2 or 3 hours, cutting up the grass while I wasn't there. I would try to clean, but then I'd leave things out. I'd do things, and I just would forget or get distracted, or I'd do, you know, I just caused my parents to age very quickly. So,
was there the hyperactivity part as well, the bouncing off the walls that we always hear about?
Yes. I'm ADHD-C, which is I'm inattentive, I'm hyperactive, and I'm impulsive. So I would constantly be running around. My mother said that I never crawled, that I ran. As soon as I got on 2 feet, I was a little kid that ran around. And she couldn't – I was youngest of 5 kids, so she couldn't keep track of me. And there would be many times when I would – break out of the house and run down the yard or down the street, and my father would find me several blocks away in my diapers, and they could just not understand why I had so much energy. Mm-hmm. My mother used to say that as soon as my eyes popped open from a nap, the crib would tremble, she'd say, "Oh, little monster's awake," and that was me.
The cute family name they had for you.
Yeah, very cute. Therapy has helped tremendously.
Yeah. what about other kids? I mean, what was school like?
School was disappointing. I mean, my teachers would always say, "Rob, you're very smart, but, you know, you need to pay attention, focus." You know, I was a behavioral issue. But back then, there wasn't all of this information about ADHD. There wasn't ADHD. I was just a kid that needed to be spanked more. Mm-hmm. And I had teachers calling my mother asking if it was okay to spank me. I'd come to class, and my desk would be outside in the hallway before I even did anything. I had teachers that used to kick me out of class and have me march around outside the school or measure the school with a ruler or whatever it was just to get me out of their hair. And again, I tried. I really was trying to be a good kid. When I blurted out answers that were wrong, I wasn't trying to be a smartass. I just tried to, you know, I was into learning. And it was just very hard for teachers to deal with me.
And as difficult as that is as a small child, I assume that adolescence didn't help.
No, adolescence was horrible. I tried killing myself twice in eighth grade, as a matter of fact, because of this whole issue and being misunderstood and trying so hard to manage my behavior. I say things and I don't realize I say them. I do stuff and I don't realize that I do them. And I just assumed that I was crazy. And I, even up until my college days when I started making ADHD a gift, I thought that I was going to wind up in a white padded room. And that was my childhood and my adolescence and young adulthood. I just figured that eventually I'd snap and I'd end up in a white padded room, and I wouldn't have to try so hard to fit in. I wouldn't have to try so hard to concentrate, to watch where my hands were, where I was looking, or what did I say, or what was I doing that was making people laugh. That's what it was like.
Well, you said when you went to college you made ADHD a gift. What do you mean by that?
Well, the whole book is about how I kind of turned ADHD into a positive thing. You actually mentioned in the introduction how people with ADHD tend to be hyperactive, but we can also be hyperproductive if we learn how to utilize this energy that we have. The problems that I tend to have are when I'm bored, when I have to slow myself down. I learned how to utilize the ADHD, take all this energy, and become hyperproductive. For example, the book that I wrote in about 4 weeks. I'm now on my seventh book in about 3 years. I'm very energetic. I'm able to do things once I learned how to learn and mm-hmm. how to do certain things. I finished my PhD in 2 years. It takes most of the people 4 to 5 years to get through. I was able to double up on the classes and learn, and I was able to do much more than most people do in their lives.
Do you still have symptoms, though?
Yeah, I still do a whole bunch of stupid things, like I wanted to make dinner for my wife last week, so I was going to make some egg salad and some things, and I got distracted. And well, to make a long story short, eggs explode, apparently, if you leave them in water too long. So, little things like that. My wife, we play a game where I meet my wife on the porch when she comes home from work, and she says, "What did you do now?" And she goes in the house trying to figure out what I did wrong. And then when she finds it, I say, "Let me explain." And I try to put together a reasonable explanation as to why, you know, the vacuum cleaner has sucked up a sock and is now smoking, you know, things of that nature. I still have issues, but I think that I've learned how to deal with it a lot easier than I have, you know, than when I was a kid.
Sure.
When I was a kid, I was so lonely. I was so miserable. And death seemed like a really good option for me. And now I have this energy. Yes, I do stupid things on occasion. I say things that are just asinine. But I have an incredible life, and I'm able to utilize all this energy that I have and the creativity to do something positive.
We're talking about adults with ADHD. Our guest is Robert Jergen. He's the author of Little Monster, Growing Up with ADHD. Our number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's talk with Judy. Judy calling from Palo Alto in California.
Oh, hi, yes. I'm calling because I'm interested in the role of the spouse. I'm married to an ADD who's hypoactive, very bright, very sweet. And I've done every trick in the book to learn patience. I've been to every psychotherapist, I think, in California. I've done every mystical practice, shamanism included, trying to find how to be kinder to this very, very sweet man who bungles just about everything and is totally unaware of his behavior.
Well, I do the same thing, and I
I was hoping you were going to say it was Crystal solved the whole thing, Robert. But anyway,
no, I don't know. I think talking to my wife would be the better person to talk to. I do stupid things all the time. Like I'll ask my wife, "Do you want anything?" And she say, "Yeah, why don't you bring up some ice cream or a book?" And I'll go downstairs and I'll forget what I want to bring to her, and then I'll just come back and she'll look at me and say, "Did you forget something?" And I, you know, so it's that constant thing. But my wife really loves that about me. She thinks it's kind of endearing in a sense because there's never a dull moment around me. So what's going to happen now? You know, she was the first person in my life to really appreciate me for who I was, as opposed to all the other people who said, "Rob, you're a great guy, but..." You know, or my parents, "I love you, but..."
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the patience that you're talking about is just something that's just natural in a relationship. It's okay to get angry. It's okay to get frustrated. But if you really love that person for who that person is, then that's just who they are. It's not as if there's part of me, like my left arm is ADHD, and then there's part of me that's Norwegian, or there's part of me or whatever. This is who I am, and my wife loves me because of it. And she, she gets a little bit annoyed because I will ask the same questions over and over and over again. And you know, I just have to learn. I'm sorry. You apologize. So when I screw up, and I do, you apologize, you try to make it better, and you move on.
Well, that's lovely. That's inspiring. Thank you.
So I hope that it works out. Now, I'm actually going to be working on a book now, kind of a sequel to what I'm doing now, about being married to somebody with ADHD. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times you probably don't understand why we do the stuff that we do. It's not that we're trying to be, we don't care. If we don't listen to you, it's not because you're not important. We just get distracted.
And from what he said, Judy, you can expect that book out next week.
Oh,
hopefully.
Wonderful.
Good luck to you, Judy. We appreciate
the phone call. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Judy.
In 1994, Dr. Edward Hallowell's best-selling book, Driven to Distraction, introduced the general public to the world of attention deficit disorder. Since then, he's written extensively on the subject, and Dr. Hallowell joins us now from East Ham, Massachusetts. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, very nice to be with you.
Now, what's the easiest way to explain ADHD?
Well, I call it a gift that's hard to unwrap, and I suppose you could think of it, untreated ADD is sort of like having nearsightedness without having eyeglasses, and then as you get treatment, you get eyeglasses, and all of a sudden you can focus, and as Rob says, suddenly you can make use of all these ideas and sort of vectors that have been swirling around inside of you. For adults to get treatment, it can be dramatic how their lives change for the better, not only professionally, but personally, and just how they feel about being alive can go from quite negative to quite exuberant, and it's a wonderful condition to treat for that reason.
Well, we'll talk more about diagnosis and treatment and those things when we come back from a short break, but in the few seconds we have left in this segment, Robert was saying there are apparently many different types of ADHD.
Well, there's many types of ADHD. There are people who have it, and I'm not one for classifying. What I pretty much try to do is say, look, tell me what's getting in your way. I don't really care about the label. What's getting in your way of achieving your goals? And then what can we do to get that out of the way? And also, what are your gifts? And that's the part that I think we really need to emphasize even more. What are your gifts, your potential gifts, your interests? What can we turn into gold that right now is being wasted?
We're talking about adults and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And when we come back from a break, we'll take more of your calls. If this is something you've dealt with, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, totn@npr.org is the address. I'm Neil Conan, back after the break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about ADHD, or Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, an illness most often associated with children. There are many adults, though, who suffer from this condition as well. Our guests are Dr. Edward Hallowell, a psychiatrist and director of the Hallowell Center in Sudbury, Massachusetts, and Robert Jergen, who's the author of Little Monster, Growing Up with ADHD. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And well, why don't we go to the phones? Our next caller is Terry. Terry with us from Williston, South Carolina.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm adult ADHD. I have two children who are ADHD. Life is an adventure, to put it mildly. Recently, I've heard a lot of talk about thimerosal, which is a mercury-based preservative in vaccinations. I'm just curious, is there any connections that you know of?
In terms of vaccinations being the source of ADHD, the cause of it?
At least being a contributing factor.
Dr. Hallowell, what can you tell us about that?
There's no connection that I know of, and the strongest evidence is that most ADD is genetically determined. This is a trait, and I think of it as a trait rather than an illness or a disorder. It's a trait that you inherit. However, there are kinds of ADHD that can be acquired through brain injury and trauma. And there is reason to believe there might be environmental pollutants, such as thimerosal that you're talking about, that could produce a syndrome that looks like ADHD. But most of the ADHD that we see now is inherited. And by the way, you don't inherit ADHD. You inherit the genes that predispose you to developing it. And if one parent has ADHD, the chances are about 1 in 3 that a given child will also have it. I just also want to stress that this is potentially a gift. Now, of course, it's also potentially a curse. The prisons are full of people with undiagnosed ADHD. But so are the halls of CEOs. David Neeleman, the great CEO of JetBlue Airlines, has flamboyant ADHD, and he loves it. and your guest Rob, I love his attitude. So once you learn how to unwrap the gift, and that's what's so key. And I think it's very important that listeners realize that having the positive attitude can make all the difference between being able to unwrap the gift and not.
Terry, good luck.
I think you're very right about that. My older son is at the College of Charleston, and he is certainly unwrapping his gift very well.
Wonderful. I love to hear that.
Good for him.
Terry, thanks very much for the call.
Certainly. Thank you.
Robert, how did you get diagnosed?
Well, it's a long story, but I was a special ed teacher, and I was working with a student with schizophrenia. And he had all these issues, and I was reading him the Riot Act, saying, all you have to do is take these medication, and your life is going to be fine. And I suddenly thought, well, maybe there's something medically wrong with me. Maybe that's why I'm having all these problems. Again, this is early 1990s, before all this really became known. And I went to my doctor. They did some brain scans and EEG and MRI, and they found some things that were different, and they didn't know what it was. And at the time, I was seeing a therapist kind of going through all this depression stuff that tends to go along with ADHD. And it just so happened that I was taking a class on behavior disorders, and it just all fell into place. I read an article about the brain scans and how frontal lobe and the brain stem tend to be different for kids with ADHD, and it just all fell into place. And I have to
Could I just interrupt real quick and say,
sure,
I don't want listeners to think you need a brain scan to make this.
No, absolutely.
Because you really don't.
Well, and they didn't know. Again, they weren't looking for ADHD when I was. They thought I had epilepsy at first, or some of the other things that they thought I was. An anxiety disorder, those kinds of things. It just so happened that I kept pushing and pushing and said, no, I don't think that this is what's right. And then they did these EEGs and MRIs, and they found the differences. And it was just a watershed moment in my life. The idea that I wasn't a loser, that I wasn't the little monster that everybody told me that I was.
Exactly.
I was different, and I had all this energy, and I had to sit down and think, well, how do I utilize this energy appropriately? All my problems seem to be when I have to slow down. Well, how about if I go faster than everybody else? And that's when everything just started turning around and life became wonderful.
I tell kids that they've got a race car brain and they can win a lot of races as long as they learn how to use the brakes when they head into a turn.
Right. And I tell them, it's like ADHD is like being a superhero, but somebody needs to teach you how to fly, much like Superman. Superman has ADHD, he's running around, he's flying, but we need to teach you how to use those gifts that you have so you can solve all the crime and do all the stuff that you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Hollowell, does it manifest itself differently in adults than it does in children?
Well, fundamentally, no. But as you grow up, you change. So to that extent, yes. And not many grown-ups come to me with a chief complaint of I squirm in my seat or I can't wait in line in the cafeteria. Yeah. Instead, they come in saying I'm underachieving at work and I don't know why, or I can never be on time, or I show up with my brilliant idea, but I show up at the wrong meeting on the wrong day. And so I'm not getting rewarded for the great ideas I have, or I'm not writing the book that I know I could write, or I'm not building the business that I know I could build. And that unexplained underachievement is sort of the main reason that adults come to see me. And my goodness, what a difference identifying this condition can make, and then helping them turn around their lives so wonderfully for the better.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another,
absolutely.
Get another caller.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we just want to get to Andrew. Andrew's on the line with us from Berkeley, California.
Hi, how's it going, Neil?
All right.
I understand all the talk about ADD, about being a gift and stuff, and I've definitely realized that to a certain extent in my life. But for me, the only thing that's really worked to control my ADHD has been Ritalin. And Ritalin, I've tried all the other drugs, Strattera, Adderall, yoga, everything. I mean, like, it hasn't worked. And Ritalin has been a godsend because it's allowed me to get to, a PhD program like Dr. Jergen. But I have to take it because I can't read if I don't take it. And when I take it, I'm emotionally unavailable. I'm insular. I'm anxious, which is the opposite of what I'm like when I'm off my medication. And so I'm living this Jekyll and Hyde life and have to explain to people why I'm not available to them and why I'm not talking and like why I only want to focus on what I want to do.
Well, I mean, you show how the medicine can be such a godsend. And you know, and when I say it's a potential gift, underline potential, untreated, it's a curse. It can isolate you and worse than that, lead you to addiction, to criminal behavior, all kinds of bad stuff. So I'm not saying cavalierly it's a gift at all. It takes a lot of work and a lot of discipline to turn it into a gift. Medication, when medication works, it's a godsend. But hopefully in the years to come, we'll have even more effective ways than medication, and we won't have to use medication.
Yeah, no, I exactly. I just, the thing is, for some of us with ADHD, medication is the only thing that helps. And I'm hoping that at some point there's going to be a medication that allows, I mean, something better than Strattera that allows it to be treated with medication but not with the stimulant medication.
Well, you know, but before you say medication is the only thing that works, I just say I don't quite think you're right, and I don't think even you think you're right, because some obvious factors are crucial. Finding the right job, marrying the right person, as Rob has done, marrying someone who sees what's in you for its upside rather than marrying a controlling, reprimanding person who is only putting you down all the time. Finding the right job where there's a good match, where your creative gifts can come out instead of you being penalized for being late or being disorganized. Getting enough sleep, physical exercise, tremendously helpful in dealing with this. Eating properly, evidence that omega-3 fatty acids may help. So there are many non-medication steps that may seem obvious, but if you don't honor them, you won't get nearly the benefit that you otherwise would get.
That's true. It's tough to find a job by itself.
Go ahead, Robert.
I'd like to add something, too. I was in the same boat. I was on, I think, maybe 12, 15 different medications and different types of combinations of medications. And some of them worked, some of them didn't, some of them had some serious side effects. I have a vocal tic as a result of one of my medications. Once I started looking at kind of a multimodality approach to looking at how to utilize ADHD, for example, I had to learn how to learn. Nobody taught me how to study. They taught me how to read, but I never learned how to read a textbook. I read a textbook like I read a novel, every single word, and that's not effective. You shouldn't do that. I didn't know how to take notes effectively. I tried to write down everything. So I had to learn how to learn, and then I had to develop environments where I could concentrate. For example, fluorescent lights are horrible for me. I can't concentrate in a lot of classrooms because lights just make me feel very anxious. I can't go to libraries because every little noise distracts me. So I had to customize my work environment so I could concentrate. And then you just have to find things that allow you to concentrate, such as medications or yoga or eating. I don't take any medications at this point.
But what you're saying is so important that someone ask the individual what works for you.
I think
oftentimes doctors start suggesting and prescribing before they've really taken an inventory from the individual. And the inventory isn't forthcoming because they're kind of inhibited at the beginning. But you want to say, what works for you? And they'll say, well, gee, would you believe it? But I read best sitting on the floor with my back against the dishwasher when it's on. You know,
right. and then
do that in the middle of the night. Well, then by all means do that, you know, and you'd be amazed how much people can tell you about what works for them if you just give them the opportunity to volunteer it and then develop it. What I say to my patients is, let's use whatever works as long as it's safe and it's legal. You know, there's a whole lot out there that isn't in the textbooks that might work for a given individual.
Andrew, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you so much.
All right, it's an email we got from Charles. I'm 57 years old. I've been diagnosed with ADHD. I'm now taking Strattera, and at age 57, am one of the oldest people regularly taking it. I no longer take antidepressants, and my life has really changed. I'm hyperproductive and have a threshold of boredom measured in nanoseconds. However, I have done the work of two all my life, Charles Mims. Here's another email, though. This writer asked us not to use the name. I think it's great that you're aware of your ADHD and are willing to cope with it. I'm married to a man who is in denial about it and has not been diagnosed. He is always late, has difficulty with getting anywhere on time, and this has affected his work. He's changed jobs several times over the past 10 years. It's affected our marriage. He's also very intelligent and sweet, as the other caller mentioned. It's a challenge and very difficult to deal with. I feel as if he's a child that will never grow up and is much more difficult than my 6-year-old son.
Well, a lot of men, and this is much more common among men, live in that big river in Egypt called denial. And for for whatever reason, they're really afraid of getting help. And what I often say to the wives, because the wives will come to me, if you can find some way to bring him into my office, I'll bet I can detoxify the diagnosis for him, and he'll realize that he doesn't have to be afraid of it anymore. It'll lower his golf score, or it'll allow him to, you know, do much better at work. And see, what they're usually afraid of is it'll take control away from them. It'll change their personality. It'll take away their creativity. None of that happens. You see, it's simply like eyeglasses. You're able to focus better. You're able to make use of the talents you have that are not being made use of. And not just talents at work, the talent of being able to engage with your wife in a conversation for more than 3 seconds.
We are talking with Dr. Edward Hollowell. He's the author of Delivered from Distraction, Getting the Most Out of Life with Attention Deficit Disorder, and with Robert Juergen, the author of Little Monster, Growing Up with ADHD. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Maria calling from Iowa City.
Yes.
Hi.
I read your book, Dr. Hollowell, and I just loved it. Driven to Distraction. Great job. I really appreciate it.
Read the new one, Delivered from Distraction. It's even better.
Oh, Delivered from Distraction. Okay, great. I would like that, too. Hey, my dad thinks my mother had ADHD, and my son definitely has ADHD. He's been diagnosed. And I think I have it, but some psychologists think I do, and some think I don't. And I was wondering, is there any definitive test? Because I can't keep a job. I'm unemployed again, and my unemployment is running out. And they told me I have a very high IQ, and I have all sorts of degrees. And I would really like to take something that would help me. But I ran into a psychologist I went to for years who didn't admit until years later that he doesn't even believe in ADHD. And I wanted
Absolutely. That kind of story, people ask me when I give lectures, do you believe in Ritalin? And I answer, you know, it's not a religious principle. It's not a matter of believing in it. It's a medication, and when it's used properly, it's helpful, and when it's not, it's dangerous. The same thing with this diagnosis. You don't have to believe in it. The diagnosis is just a shorthand for a collection of symptoms, and you either have these symptoms and they're getting in your way, or you don't. If your focus waxes and wanes more than most people, if you're impulsive, if you can't follow through, if you're disorganized, well, those are the symptoms that we shorthandedly call attention deficit disorder. So don't see a professional who's stuck in a sort of attention surplus way, stuck on the details and fussing over that. See someone who will say, let me help you make use of your talents. Let's get you over the obstacles that are getting in your way. Whether we call it ADHD or peanut butter and jelly sandwich, we can agree you have these symptoms and they're standing in your way. So let's do something to get them out of your way. And you're clear from your conversation, just brief snippet, you're much smarter than your track record has shown so far. So let's work on getting the obstacles out of your way.
I would sure like to, but gosh, how do you know who to go to? There's so many different kinds of tests. Is there like a...
No, there's no test. Again, there's no test, and this is something that most people don't realize. There's no test for ADHD. By the way, there's no test for depression or schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. Everything in this field of the mind has to do with the history. So you want to sit down with someone who can take a careful history. And from the sounds of you, you know, it sounds to me like, you know, you're on this in... I can't diagnose you, obviously, over the radio, but it sounds like you're a strong chance that you'd be in this domain. But there's no test. I'd need to talk to you. Talk about your history. Talk about what life is like for you. And out of that, the diagnosis emerges, just as it does for depression or bipolar disorder. And then once we have... And a diagnosis in this field is really our best guess. You know, what do these symptoms add up to? And have we seen this before in others? And then if we say, yes, we have, and it's called ADHD, well, then why not give you a trial of medication? These medications are very safe and effective when used properly. And my goodness, if it changes your life dramatically for the better, why futz around year after year trying to say, well, do you meet the criteria for the diagnosis or not? Go ahead and find a responsible doctor who can be flexible enough to maybe give you a chance at a better life.
Oh, boy, I would sure like to, because this is no way to live. I have it.
You might want to think about what kind of job you're in as well. I mean, there's no shame in changing jobs over the course of your life. I love teaching, but I don't see myself being a teacher for the next 44 years. So maybe Absolutely. You need the change. Maybe there's something else out there. It's not like 40 years ago.
I've already changed careers once.
Well, and that's okay. Find something that you love to do right now, do it, and then when that changes, try something else.
Maria,
I'm sorry. But I'm just going to say you're clearly not feeling fulfilled, and you have there's every reason that you should feel fulfilled.
Maria, thanks very much for the phone call, and we
thank
wish
you
good luck.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Appreciate it. And we'd like to thank our guests. Robert Juergen, appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
Robert Juergen's book is Little Monster, Growing Up with ADHD, and he is also a professor of education at the University of Wisconsin. Dr. Hallowell, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Edward Hallowell, author of Delivered from Distraction, Getting the Most Out of Life with Attention Deficit Disorder, and he joined us from studios in East Ham, Massachusetts. When we come back, we'll talk about ADHD and women. We'll also talk about the Tour de France and two riders who are challenging the Alps, one more speedily than the other. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're wrapping up our discussion of adults with ADHD for a quick Q&A on ADHD. And if you'd like to read a personal account of an adult with ADHD, you can visit our website at npr.org. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Over the years, most of the research into ADHD has been on males. Boys were believed to make up the majority of ADHD sufferers. Things are changing, though. Joining us now to talk more about how girls are being diagnosed and how this affects perceptions of the disorder is Patricia Quinn, a developmental pediatrician and director of the National Center for Gender Issues and ADHD. She's with us from her home here in Washington, D.C. Nice of you to join us today.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
How is this disorder different in women?
What we found is that girls and women don't present with the disruptive behavior that boys do, so that they don't get noticed. It is a commonly undiagnosed condition in women, and one of the things we're finding in the most recent research is that women actually are more symptomatic than men and have significantly more problems with anxiety, depression, and emotional disorders that need to be addressed. We also find it's commonly misdiagnosed in women and girls.
Misdiagnosed as depression?
Yes. What will happen is a woman or a girl might be depressed because of her ADD and demoralized because things keep happening to her over and over again. And she goes into a physician with these overt symptoms of depression and demoralization or anxiety because of her ADD symptoms. And clinicians are pretty good at recognizing, oh, I know what this is. I can fix it. And what we have found is that unless the clinician also thinks ADHD and diagnoses that, simply treating the depression and or the anxiety doesn't address the symptoms of ADD, which are the underlying cause, and doesn't deal with the disorganization and the feelings of being overwhelmed. I frequently see women who've been to therapists and been on different antidepressants, and they'll come in to me and say, something else is wrong. You know, I might not feel depressed anymore, but I'm still having all these problems.
Here's an email we got. I'm a 35-year-old female with ADD. I have the typical female symptoms, history of being a tomboy, disorganized, and more. I was placed in special education classes or repeatedly sent to the child study team for evaluation throughout grade school. None of these methods were effective since I'm not hyperactive, never exhibited extreme behavior problems, or had disruptive behavior. Could you please comment on often overlooking and mishandling of young girls and women with ADD and ADHD? Is that a good example?
That's very typical, and it's really the most common presentation that I see. Very often in families, women will say, you know, my brother was diagnosed at 7, I'm 32, and I'm just getting here to be diagnosed, or 35. And what we found is that women tend to try to compensate for their ADD by working harder. They also tend to become perfectionistic sometimes in order to get everything done. You know, this is a disorder that's diagnosed if you're kind of bothering other people, and girls don't bother other people. And what we find is that women with ADD tend to stay in the closet a very long time. We always say it's a very messy closet, but they stay in there. So they don't get diagnosed, and it's unfortunate because it really wreaks havoc with their self-esteem, Most of the women I diagnose, the first thing I say is, you know, you have ADD. And they'll say back to me responsively, you mean I'm not stupid? I only have ADD? And we want to get them diagnosed because this is a very treatable disorder. I've heard your other guest speaking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can do something about this. And I think it's a very hopeful diagnosis because we have treatments out there that can change people's lives.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is Beth. Beth calling from Rochester, New York.
Hi. I hope you can hear me. I'm on a cell phone. I have been diagnosed for over 10 years with ADD. And like all the other callers and people that I'm calling in, I've found myself laughing because we're just, it's so, you hear all these descriptions and you're, this is me, right? But I had a child almost four years ago, and although I had it under control, it seems that, and I'm a single mom, which sort of makes it even crazier in life, but it doesn't seem like any of the medication that I have is working. You know, I've been diagnosed with major depression, which probably was a result of the ADD through my childhood, which is funny. It's sort of an oxymoron. I'm not a depressed person. But anyway, I wondered if there was any studies for ADD after you've had a child.
One of the things that we have been looking at here at the National Center and that I've written a lot about is we find that estrogen and hormones do affect the symptoms in women. And we find that when women are in a high estrogen state, like pregnancy, they do very well. But in low estrogen states, after they have a baby, before their periods, or as they enter menopause, estrogen is the brain is a target organ for estrogen. And what we find is that when estrogen levels fall, the dopamine levels and serotonin levels in the brain also fall. And that results in increasing ADD symptoms and increasing depression at those times when you have low estrogen. So right after you have a baby, you may see that their ADD is worse. As women enter, the reason why we commonly diagnose women in their late 30s and 40s is their estrogen is falling now, and we find that their ADD symptoms get worse. So there is a hormonal connection in dealing with the symptoms of ADD in women that we didn't have to deal with when we were dealing with men or boys.
Well, you know, that it's just a confirmation of something that almost seems totally obvious. And I've always, thank you for your comments, and thank you for the discussion about this today. It's a topic, you know, I don't have health insurance, so it's something that I have a wonderful family that's trying to understand the chaos. And I appreciate, I'm going to send this as an email to everyone so they can listen to this episode.
Okay. Beth, thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And again, if you'd like to read more about ADHD in adults, you can visit our website at npr.org. Patricia Quinn, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Patricia Quinn, a developmental pediatrician, currently the director of the National Center for Gender Issues and ADHD.